from Two Keto LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. Thank you, Liz Myers, for supporting me in this podcast by making a pledge at my Patreon page. Do you want to hear your name here at the top of the show? Are you enjoying this podcast and would like to help me make more episodes? Then head to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman or hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It means a great deal to me and you will get to headline the show just like Liz did today. This week's extraordinary man is Dr. Andreas Enfeldt. Dr. Enfeldt is a Swedish medical doctor specialising in family medicine. He is the founder and CEO of Diet Doctor, a fast-growing team of more than 40 co-workers. The Diet Doctor website is completely free from ads, product sales or industry sponsorship. It's instead fully funded by the people via the optional membership. Diet Doctor is by far the largest low-carb and keto website in the world, with over 350,000 daily visits. During the last 10 years, Dr. Enfeldt has authored the biggest health blog in Sweden and a number one best-selling book on nutrition that's been translated into 8 languages. He may be partly responsible for a past butter shortage in his home country, and one of his conference presentations on low carb has been viewed over 600,000 times on YouTube. Dr. Enfeldt is also on the board of the Dietary Science Foundation, a non-profit dedicated to improving scientific knowledge and helping more people live healthier lives. Dr. Enfeldt lives in Karlstad, Sweden, with his significant other and their 2 young daughters. He spends just about all his waking hours, either with his family or working on dietdoctor.com. He's the author of many of the core information pages on the site. Like many others, Diet Doctor was the first place I was sent to learn more about the ketogenic diet, and now I in turn send people there myself. I think you can imagine then what a delight it was to have the Diet Doctor, Andreas Enfeldt, all to myself to record this podcast to share with you all. If you haven't already, do check out the Diet Doctor website. When you finish listening to this, of course. Welcome, Andreas, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to be talking to you, and we're in the same time zone, which makes a change. I'm usually talking to somebody opposite sides of the world, or certainly a different time, but we're on the exact same line, which is great.
Yeah, the best time zone, if you ask me.
Yes, I'll have to agree to that.
No, I agree. It's always a tricky when I do travel a bit to the US for conferences and so on. It's always tricky, and we have a few coworkers in the US and in Canada, West Coast, 9-hour time difference. it's nice to be in the same time zone.
Exactly. It just makes things a bit easier, doesn't it? You don't run the risk, especially when you're talking to your co-workers and things, of waking someone up in the middle of the morning. Fantastic. Well, tell us a bit about you. We all know and love Diet Doctor, but I'm sure we'd like to find out a bit more about your story.
Thank you. So my name is Andreas Senfeldt. I'm a family doctor from Sweden. I got really interested in low carb perhaps 16 years ago, I guess. So it's been a while. Yeah, it was an interesting time, because back then I was just a family doctor, trying to help patients with often chronic disease like high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, obesity. Those are all common diseases. And looking back on it, it's interesting, I think, that it's really considered just normal to never get well from those diseases. Like you're supposed to, if you have them, you're expected to just keep having that, and probably it's going to get worse as you get older. And as a doctor, you basically only look at how bad it is, and if it's bad enough, then you prescribe some more drugs to be taken every day, and that's it. And then it's, welcome back in a year or something like that. And that's normal. but it's not, I don't think it's a great experience for patients to just get, sicker. And it's certainly not a lot of fun. As a doctor, you're supposed to you're supposed to actually make a difference in people's lives, not just, check how bad it is and prescribe some extra drugs if it's really bad. That's not what medicine, I think, is supposed to be like, looking back on it.
Exactly. Not what you signed up for, is it?
Well, I do think a lot of doctors get disillusioned by this situation. But anyway, so the reason why this is so interesting to look back on now is that when I found out about low carb, and obviously this is not my idea, I just read what other people have written and found out when they did scientific studies and so on.
Yes, I was going to ask you, actually, was there someone in particular that you read, or someone that you heard speaking, who there's usually for somebody there's somebody that just tips them?
Yes. Well, I think it started quite randomly. I just picked up a book on sale. I think it was a book by Michel Montignac, a French guy who's promoting a low glycemic index diet, basically. It's like a low carb light sort of diet. But I found it really fascinating because it made so much sense to me, the theory behind it. And yet, everybody seemed to, all the experts seemed to be saying that this is just a fad diet, it doesn't work, but made perfect sense. And, when I started looking at the science in support of this, it seemed legit. It seemed like this is actually working. And I read a Swedish author, a few books by him, a guy called Paulun. And then I found this guy called Gary Taubes. Maybe you've heard of him.
Think I have. Just about.
Yeah, I guess everybody has. And I read his New York Times article and the Science article, and it made a big impression on me. And then a few years later, when he had this book coming out, Good Calories, Bad Calories. So I had it on pre-order and sort of picked it up as soon as I could. And that's I think, was the most influential book for me, because to me, it sort of made all the pieces of the puzzle sort of fit together in a very clear way. Because this is a big, big book. It's like, 700 pages, something, with tons of references. And It's a challenging read for a lot of people. I found it amazing, and I know a lot of people who do. But it's not for everybody. He did come out with another sort of consumer friendly book a few years later called Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. So I guess maybe that's a simpler read. But that wasn't available back then. So I felt that I should probably write a book in Swedish, that is, you know, the same or similar story, but much easier and more simple to digest, you know, more entertaining perhaps. So I started doing that. And while I was preparing to write that book, I started a blog to sort of get going, called Kostdoktorn, which is Swedish for diet doctor. So that's how it started. Me and my brother, we launched this tiny little website in December of 2007, so 11 years ago. And this really took off quite rapidly. I mean, within a month or something, we had 500 visitors every day to this little blog, and then it just kept growing. So from trying to, you know, persuade or you know, get one patient at a time interested in this, maybe five people a day who really might be interested in low carb, might benefit from low carb in my doctor's clinic. Now, you know, suddenly 500 people a day and then 5,000 people a day, you know, it's a different scale. So it's been an exciting journey, this whole thing.
And so when you started, this was when you still had your medical practice, was it?
Sure, yeah. So I was treating patients who I thought could benefit from a low-carb diet, you know, mostly people with metabolic issues like obesity, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and so on. Sort of asking them if they were interested in a lifestyle treatment, in a dietary treatment that could, you know, they could reduce their need of medications potentially and potentially feel better and, you know, might be beneficial in many ways. And you know, I think most patients actually were quite interested in that. I think most people don't really want to be on drugs, you know, medication every day for the rest of their life. If they get the opportunity to try something, some lifestyle intervention that's actually effective, I think a lot of people are interested in trying that. Actually, most people in my experience want to at least try it. And if the effect is quite impressive when they start out, like with a strict low-carb diet, a lot of people lose, you know, maybe 4 pounds, 5 pounds in the first week, which is, you know, very good for motivation. I think a lot of people, in my experience, want to keep going. And the effect when it comes to this kind of issue is quite impressive. So yeah, it had very good results. I mean, to me, instead of patients coming back and just being slightly worse every time, the risk factors are slightly worse, they weigh slightly more, and, you know, they feel slightly worse, just, you know, 1 year older, 1 year sicker, and then started doing this, and people came back feeling better with improvements in their blood markers, and, you know, they lost weight, and, you know, they really enjoyed the food. And, you know, I tell this story that, you know, I don't remember ever getting gifts from patients before, but suddenly I started getting that quite regularly. Like, patients would bring me a bottle of wine or something, you know, just because they wanted to give something back because they were so grateful, they were feeling so great, and, you know, and feeling that they were getting healthier. And it's just a different kind of experience, really. A lot of fun. I highly recommend it to other family doctors. It's a lot of fun to have patients who are happy and, you know, getting healthier, not just by adding more medication, but actually by, you know, changing their lifestyle and not needing the medication in the first place. So that's great.
Exactly. What a difference from going from treating someone who's on this progressive disease, as it seems to have to be labeled by most people, and like you say, they're just getting a little bit worse each time, to having something so simple as what you eat to potentially be reversing all these problems. I mean, it is quite incredible. I can see why people bring you bottles of wine.
You know, it's I think it would be I think everybody would be doing this if it wasn't for a few misconceptions that sort of slow down the adoption of this. Things like there's still this fear of eating natural fat, like saturated fat, supposed to, you know, raise your cholesterol, give you heart disease, and so on. I guess you talk about this all the time on the podcast, but, you know, studies don't really support that idea. But that's one of the things that slow down the adoption of this, because people are afraid that it's going to be dangerous in some way. And then this idea that, sure, you can lose weight on a low-carb diet, but you can lose weight on any diet, and it's basically all about calories anyway. So why do low-carb if it's, you know, why not just eat all the foods that you enjoy the most and just eat a little bit less? And the problem with that, I would say, is that for most people, it just doesn't work. If you eat a little bit of everything that you enjoy, including, you know, bread and pasta and rice and, you know, processed foods and desserts and, you know, all the things that are very, very tasty, you're not likely to lose weight. And if you try to restrict the amount you eat on that kind of food, you're likely to be probably hungry, tired, and eventually just give up. Anyway, so I think a low-carb diet is unique in that way, that most people seem to be able to lose weight on that without consciously restricting calories, without consciously eating less than they feel that they need to be satisfied.
Exactly, and not being desperately miserable in the process, which is something that, you know, anyone who's counted calories has been used to.
Yeah, so exactly. So you eat food until you feel satisfied, and then you stop, and then you don't eat until you're hungry again. It's a very simple thing, really.
So you noticed quite a difference in the patients that you were seeing in your practice, but you know. So this was at the point where you felt that you wanted to get that message out to more people, and that's when you made the change and started the blog.
Yeah, so that was the main idea with the blog. It was getting out to many, many more people, because obviously working in a clinic, you can only usually talk to one person at a time, and these issues really affect millions and millions of people, even in Sweden. And certainly globally, it's hundreds of millions, if not a billion people. So, yeah, you cannot make a meaningful difference with those kind of numbers. Talking to one person at a time is just not possible. So the idea was to make a meaningful difference in Sweden, at least. And maybe you could argue that we did that, or still do that. We have, you know... ended up being up to about 50,000 visits per day for the Swedish diet doctor site. Pretty impressive. And you know, amazing stories from people who have succeeded in turning their health around. So then I started going to these conferences, worldwide, global conferences about nutrition and low carb, meeting doctors and experts and, you know, Gary Taubes and all these people. And then I realized that back then, you know, 2010 or so, there wasn't really any great resource in English for people who wanted to do this. There were a few blogs, but nothing really fantastic, nothing really, I thought, super trustworthy or simple. So I decided, hey, we're going to start an English blog as well. So that's when we launched the English version called dietdoctor.com in 2011. And it started very, very small, and then it's grown and grown until this year it's been up to about 350,000 visits per day.
Wow.
actually, by far the largest low-carb site in the world. So that's encouraging. And, you know, we've done lots of things we never did in Sweden. You know, much more video material, much more recipes, much more. We have this 2-week challenge where you get a full plan for 2 weeks and daily email reminders and, you know, everything to buy and eat and everything. It's all free. And I think about 650,000 people have signed up for it.
Fantastic.
Pretty cool. Going for a million. Yeah, that's some amazing feedback from people who have done that, gotten started that way. So it's a lot of fun to read feedback.
Yes, and it really is. We were saying a bit before we started recording that it has to be that the number one resource. I mean, when anybody asks, where do I start in my Facebook group? I can pretty well guarantee at least one of the first posts, if not the first post every time, will be to send them to the Diet Doctor website, you know, to your beginner's page. It's where I was sent, and it's where I send people to. And I think, you know, a lot of us hold Diet Doctor, have a special place in our heart for it, because it's where we started. And like you say, it's just that very simple, no nonsense, straightforward, trustworthy information, and presented, you know, I love your infographics and things like that you can print out and stick on your fridge. They're just easy to understand, and it's a really reliable place to send people. So, well, thank you for that.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. So I do think we have done some good work. I mean, it's a team effort now. We're about 40 people, great team, working on this thing, about 23 people full-time, and the rest are freelancers. And we have some amazing things coming up. So I think this is really just the beginning. And we do have a Spanish site now as well. And hopefully going to add more languages. And then we have apps coming up. We have a pretty great recipe app coming up extremely soon, actually. Might be out by the time people listen to this. It could be out.
Fantastic. Well, we'll certainly have a link to that if it isn't out already.
It's going to make it much nicer when you're on the mobile, and you know, 60% or something are on a mobile when they visit our site. So, yeah, we have several apps coming actually, but that's the first one, a recipe and meal planner app. That's going to be pretty great, I think. Well, I know it's great because I've used it, but. I'm pretty sure people are going to enjoy it a lot.
You've tested it. And like you say, people do like to access things like that on their mobile. I was talking to Kim Gedraj just the other day. I believe she's out filming some Spanish content at the moment.
Yeah, so the Kim and our video team, they are just now traveling to Chile to spend 2 weeks there at a conference and visiting people to record some interviews, some presentations, some short documentaries about low carb in South America in Spanish for our Spanish site. But it might do subtitling for it, so English speaking people who are so inclined might want to listen to it as well or watch it as well.
Oh, good idea. Yes.
It's good, I think, to get another perspective, like a South American perspective in Spanish. It's going to be interesting to see what they record.
Absolutely, yes. And like you say, it's nice to get a different take from, you know, people that you're not used to hearing speak.
I mean, we do have, I don't know what it is, like 450 English-speaking videos now, something like that. So I guess it's time for Spanish now as well.
Absolutely. And tell me a bit about, you know, your day-to-day keto and your family. What does your keto look like?
Right. So it sort of varies. Sometimes I go very, very strict keto, like, you know, below 20 grams of carbs a day, certainly. And other times I don't really feel I need that. So I might go up to 50 grams or 70 grams a day, something like that. Fortunately, you know, I never had any serious metabolic issues. I never had type 2 diabetes or obesity or anything. But, you know, when I started low carb and some intermittent fasting, I still lost maybe 20 pounds from my highest level and went down to where I am now, which is, you know, roughly where I started out at 20 years of age. Now I'm 46, so I'm back where I was at 20. I guess that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm happy here. So I don't need to be super strict keto all the time, but I occasionally do it in periods anyway because I, you know, feel good and I like the food. But I do always stay fairly low carb, like 50 to 70 grams perhaps. I don't think I very rarely go above that, I'd say. Family, I have, you know, my partner and we have two daughters who are 7 and 4. So, you know, I don't, and they're healthy, fortunately. I don't really think they need that healthy kids need a strict low carb or keto diet. I don't think that's generally necessary, but, you know, we try to cook good quality, real foods at home. We certainly avoid the most, you know, refined carbohydrates and processed foods for the most part. But, you know, when they're at the birthday parties or whatever, they get to eat what everybody else is having. I think that's just probably best. And but when they're at home with us, we don't buy much of that. So they get what we're having, and mostly they're happy with that.
Yeah. So it's a generally a low carb environment at home, and they're quite happy with that.
Yeah, lowish carb. You know, I think they certainly get fewer carbs than their friends. Although it's not low carb per se. I mean, it's like moderate carb, perhaps.
Yes, and I think, like you say, it does depend, you know, on the people who are eating and where their health is and where it looks like they need to be, and whether if they're natural moderators. I don't think I've ever been a natural moderator. As long as I can remember, I've always had some issues with food. And so for me, I think as a child, a low carb approach probably would have been quite a good idea, just because it reduces those cravings. If you're the kind of personality and the temperament with the food you choose, they have a tendency to overeat. Taking those carbs down, because they're the kind of foods that you tend to overeat, taking that level down just does take those cravings away. I think, you know, whatever age you are. So if you have children that are struggling and you know that they have a tendency to overeat those kind of things, perhaps try and eat them behind your back, things like that. It's going to be a good approach.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's low carb and keto is great for whoever needs it for health reasons. Certainly, I'm just, you know, I don't think it's necessarily necessary for everyone. Like if you're healthy, if you're at a healthy weight, if you're happy with your life the way it is, then probably you don't need keto. But certainly avoiding the worst carbs, processed foods, you know, added sugar is probably good for about 100% of everybody, possibly.
Exactly. Yes, I agree. I think if everyone took that approach to really, you know, cut down added sugars as much as they could and avoid refined and processed carbohydrates as much as they could, I think that would have such a huge effect on the population overall.
Yeah, that would be a good start, I think, for sort of in society in general. I think it's there's way too much availability of foods, crappy carbs everywhere. And then I guess there's also this idea that it's seen as completely normal to snack all the time, to eat. You know, food is always sort of available now. And I think if you go back 50 years or 100 years, it wasn't like that. Maybe you had perhaps 3 meals a day and that was it. The occasional snack, perhaps, but it's not. I mean, today you can eat all the time. You can eat every hour. There's really no problem getting food, right? And so I think that's the other aspect of it. It's not just about low carb. It's also about getting some sensible fasting into the day. So having periods of the day when you're not constantly eating, I think is very beneficial for most, if not all, people. Why not go back to 3 meals a day? and no snacking.
Exactly. It's not that complicated, is it? But I think that also goes hand in hand with the kind of foods you're eating. You know, I know if I start eating too many carbohydrates, I want to eat more often. So the two often go hand in hand.
Yeah. If you go on a low carb, high fat diet or keto diet, then most people feel less hunger and they find it much easier to do periods of fasting because it just comes naturally because you're not hungry. So why eat?
Exactly. And they've come so used to being, you know, these habits of feeling like they have to eat all the time because it's just become a societal norm. And they often get a bit worried. Oh, well, I'm a bit worried. You know, I don't feel hungry. I haven't eaten all day. Is that a problem? No, it's not a problem. I can remember, you know, they really started pushing snacks. And we're a similar age. So you probably remember the same thing. Well, I can remember sort of 5, 6 years old, where they were really starting to push snacking in the media. Before that, it wasn't a thing. You know, I can remember when I very first went to school, that snacking wasn't so much a thing. But I remember it becoming that you had to bring snacks for break time. So you were just constantly eating breakfast and then a snack at break time, then lunch, an afternoon snack, and the snack after you get home from school, and then dinner. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, you can just sense the sort of influence from the food industry, right? Because nobody makes any money when you're fasting, like nobody. But if you buy a snack, then suddenly someone got your money and they want you to keep giving them money. So they will want to promote that idea that snacking is good for you. And hey, if you're, you know, you should have a snack ready whenever you think of food. You need this snack. And also, of course, you make it taste really good and sweet and nice and addictive even. So it's not so strange that we have an obesity epidemic when the food supply is full of sugar and refined carbohydrates and is available all the time. And it's, you know, really tasty and addictive and sweet. And you want to eat it all the time, and people eat it all the time. I mean, okay, so that's what happens. You get an obesity epidemic. So the way to reverse that, I think, is just to question these ideas. You know, maybe we shouldn't be eating a high carb diet. Maybe we should avoid added sugars, avoid processed foods, and stop snacking between meals, maybe go back to 3 meals a day of real food. And maybe that's all that's required for most people. And then some people may need a strict low-carb or keto diet to really reverse it and really make it happen for them. Or some more like structured intermittent fasting, like, you know, avoiding eating for 16 hours a day and eating within an 8-hour window. For example, that's a popular way to do it, right?
Exactly. I mean, you mentioned, you know, there's still this fear of fat, but there's a fear of hunger as well. There's nothing wrong with hunger. It's something, you know, when people start doing a bit of intermittent fasting, which often happens, I think, when you've been low carb for a while, you just naturally fall into fancying trying it. But it's quite good to start feeling really hungry again. You should feel hungry when you eat, you know, which goes against this whole snacking thing, doesn't it? This sort of fear of feeling hungry. There's nothing wrong with having your first meal of the day and then actually getting hungry before you eat again. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's very natural. And of course, there are exceptions. I mean, depending on who's listening, I mean, there are eating disorders like anorexia and so on, where, you know, that could be a bad thing, obviously, in those specific circumstances. But for most people without those kind of eating issues, I think it's perfectly natural to feel hunger once or twice a day, you know, a little bit before you eat. And then, as you said, once you eat, if you've been hungry for a short while, well, it's going to taste much better. So that's great too.
Exactly. That's the thing, isn't it? It gets your mouth watering and then you really enjoy your food because you're hungry.
Well, you feel full after your meal and then you feel hungry before the next meal. I think it's a little bit strange that some people actually, it seems, like you said, kind of fear this feeling of hunger, feel that it's something wrong and you're supposed to eat before you're hungry. And even there are some experts saying that, you know, experts on weight loss, no less, saying that you should avoid being hungry. You should eat before you're hungry. Otherwise, you're going to completely lose control and just stuff yourself with way too much food. I think that's a very strange idea.
Yes, and obviously, like you say, there are groups where it is different for, but we're talking about the general population here.
Yeah. So certainly for people with eating disorders like anorexia, it's something to look out for. But, you know, for most people, it's just very normal to feel hungry before you're going to eat. That's the way it's supposed to work, right? You have that sensation to tell your body to tell you that it's time to eat soon. Maybe not this minute, but, you know, sometime soon.
Exactly.
And that's all natural.
What kind of changes have you seen in Sweden over recent years? Because I know I've seen in the media there has been a little bit of change in what the government's recommending for what people eat. It does seem to have gone a bit more towards our way of thinking.
Yes, I mean, I think there's this slow change that is happening, but it's very slow and it's taking years and years and years. So the change, I think, is a steady decline in the focus on fat, the focus that on saying that saturated fats are bad for you and eating, you know, fat and cholesterol is going to give you heart disease. That whole idea is starting to become a bit discredited because science doesn't really support it, and a lot of experts are realizing that now and sort of backing away from it slowly. So there is, I think, every year less of a focus on that, and I think it's just going to disappear. It's just a question of time because it seems like it's just the theory is just wrong. There never was any good science to support it, and now we have fairly good evidence that it's just wrong. So that's probably what's going to happen. It's just going to, you know, be less of a focus every year, and eventually it's just going to be gone. And then we have this increasing focus on sugar, processed carbohydrates, and, you know, processed foods in general. That's really where you should put your focus on trying to avoid that, especially if you have issues with obesity or type 2 diabetes or other metabolic issues. That's where you should put the focus. That's what you should be avoiding. And yeah, so every year it's moving just a few degrees more sort of in that direction. But at this very slow speed, it could still be decades before, you know, it's really good. So it's too slow, and I think that's what, you know, we're trying to do at Diet Doctor, and that's what lots of people like you and you know, other people online are trying to do, trying to speed up this process so that, you know, more people get better advice faster, and so that they are able to be hopefully healthier and, you know, feeling better today or this year, not in 20 years. You know, for some people, it might be too late in 20 years. So can't wait for that.
Exactly. I think it's this sort of pincer movement where, like you say, the changes from above are coming down so slowly. It's like this massive ocean liner, isn't it, that's got to do it.
Yeah. It takes forever to change it.
A U-turn, but it just has to do it slowly. But because at the end of the day, if they did it quickly, they'd have to say that they were wrong, which they're never going to do, are they?
Wow. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the idea is that, you know, for this sort of paradigm shift to happen in a scientific topic, basically an older generation of experts have to retire or even die. so that slightly less old generation can take over and with a more sort of updated modern view on the science, because it's really hard for human beings to change their minds, unfortunately. I mean, it's true for everybody, certainly for me and you and everybody. It's very hard, challenging to change your mind. If you've been convinced about something for decades, it's really hard to accept that you've been wrong all this time. Some people manage to do it, and I'm always impressed, but, you know, most people don't. And I had a fairly easy time. I did change my mind, however, because when I came out of med school in, you know, the early, like 20 years ago, almost, I spent a few years telling patients and so on that they should avoid fat and watch out for saturated fats, but only a few years. So I didn't mess up too many lives, hopefully.
Wasn't too entrenched.
No. Yeah, I got away from that relatively soon. And then, but who knows, you know, if I had that opinion up until now, would I have been able to change now? I think it would have been much harder, probably. I guess I was lucky.
Yes, you're right. It is difficult to change old habits. But I think the thing is, and it's what you mentioned before, and it's the reason why your patients bought you bottles of wine. It's just feeling better really quite quickly by doing something very simple. And it's just that, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and you see that change. And lots of people approach it from a weight loss point of view. But I certainly feel this way, and I know many other people do, that the reason they stick with it and the reason they really get behind it and the reason they really try and help other people with it is because of all the health and well-being changes they see in their lives. And that's what helps them stick to it. That's what makes it a lifestyle rather than just a diet change. And that's what makes them try and pass it on. And I think, you know, I mentioned before, we have this slow movement coming down from above. But I think we've got this big groundswell coming up from underneath in the people who are changing that will come up and probably get there before the top level's coming down. But, you know, they'll meet in the middle at some point.
Yeah, I think we need both. So we need people to fight the sort of fight at the top, trying to influence governments and experts, but we also need the sort of bottom-up movement online, and I think they can both strengthen each other, and you know they're both equally important.
Absolutely.
Although maybe the bottom-up movement is the core, actually. Maybe it's the most important thing, if you ask me.
Well, it's just that you can affect change for yourself, you know, with your own GP, with your own treatments.
There's a lot of power in that, just trying for yourself and seeing, okay, so this works for me. Then you sort of know that that's true for you. And there's power in that. You don't have to, you know, do a 20-year randomized controlled trial on yourself. You can just change your diet and see what happens. For example, will you lose weight? Will you feel good? Will you enjoy the food? I mean, you can find out in weeks, right? It doesn't have to take decades.
Exactly. It's easy to do. Well, you mentioned a couple of things coming up with Diet Doctor. This new app sounds fantastic, but presumably you're going to be out and about at various conferences. I think we're probably going to cross paths in Denver in March.
Yep, I will be in Denver. I guess I will perhaps go to most of the big low-carb conferences next year. I'm going to Low Carb Universe next week. Maybe that's it's going to be this podcast might be out before that. But it's in Mallorca, European.
Oh, I'm very envious of that one. That one really does look fantastic. I'd love to go to that.
Yeah, you should come some year. I was there last year. It was nice. It's a special place, you know. More like intimate, not so big, but you get plenty of time to hang out with other people and chat.
Yes, it looks quite personal. I remember talking to the organisers at the conference in London in May, and they were talking about, you know, the mixture of speakers, but then of little more personal workshops. And it sounds like a really good setup.
No, it's good. Yeah, I like it. But it would be fun to meet in Denver, I guess. It's going to be it.
Yes, fantastic. So it sounds like you're busy all the time.
Well, it's an exciting journey, you know, where the company is growing thanks to the support of our members. You know, we don't show any ads, we don't sell any products, we don't take any money from industry. So we're completely funded by the people with our optional membership. You know, the goal is for everything that people need to be freely available on the website without even signing up for a trial. But you know, if you want to, you get even more doing that, and that's how we can support our growing team. Yeah, we are hiring more people. If someone's listening and they are passionate about low carb and they want to have a career doing this, trying to help people, well, they can come to our website and check out the careers tab at the bottom, and maybe we have a position for them. We actually have a number of people who have moved from different places to Stockholm, Sweden to join our core team, but we also have a number of people who are working remotely from the US and Canada, for example. So plenty of possibilities.
That's right. I remember talking to Kim and her saying that she was, I can't remember exactly where it was now. Was it somewhere in South America where she saw you speak and you mentioned, it was just that thing, you mentioned that you had a position for a Spanish speaker, I think, available, and or you were, what that might have been, when you were wanting to start up the Spanish speaking site. And yeah, she applied for the job and she moved to Stockholm. She loves it.
So Kim, she moved from Bolivia to Stockholm. That's quite a...
Bolivia, that's right.
Quite a move. But she's fantastic. So she's really helped us get this Spanish Diet Doctor site up and running. It's exciting. Now it's probably the biggest low-carb site in Spanish, I think, by a significant margin.
Fantastic. So you're hitting those markers in multiple languages, which is brilliant. And your membership site is pretty strong.
We're hoping to get some French and German site next year, hopefully. Maybe Portuguese, we'll see.
Great. Oh, I should look out for that in France. So what sort of level is your membership site at? I seem to remember last time I looked it was 40 or 50,000. It's a pretty strong force.
Yeah, so now we're past 55. Yeah, going strong.
Great.
Hopefully 100K next year. We'll see.
Brilliant. And that means you can, you know, produce more and more content, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the whole idea. You know, nobody's taking any money out of this company. Since we started it 2009, the company, and 2007, the website, just we have invested everything. Nobody's getting anything but a fair salary, and everything beyond that we get in revenue, we just invest it, hire more people, do more amazing things. And it's just an exciting thing to see what this company can become.
Yes, it really is. And I think that's, you know, that's what's nice from a membership point of view, is that yes, is that you're paying for this new content to be produced.
Yeah, well, our members, they are the ones who are making this possible. Everything we do is thanks to their support. So, you know, thank you, everybody.
Well, fantastic. Well, I look forward to all the new things that are coming up.
What's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, I'm also in the process of launching a blog, but nowhere on the level of Diet Doctor, but trying to harness some other areas. So yes, obviously I have this podcast, but would like to build a blog, a YouTube channel, all the usual things, but just try and get the information out there in more ways, talk to more people on different forms.
So what's your sort of niche? I guess you need some specific sort of thing that you can do that is very special. what's it going to be?
Well, good question. I suppose I really, you know, my focus is what I know. So, you know, I predominantly talk to women and focus on women's issues. But, you know, I have the things that I know about because I've been through them. So, you know, the weight loss surgery and obesity and problems were some, you know, some mental health issues, depression and things like that. So I suppose I focus to a certain extent, like anyone does, I guess, on what they know. But I guess there's not an easy niche to carve out there. But
oh, makes perfect sense, I think. Focus on what you know best. Sounds great. Good luck.
And I just, thank you. I like hearing other people's stories. I think it's the most relatable, just, you know, hearing what people have to say and their stories. And that tends to, you know, resonate with people who are listening.
Sounds great. I mean, good luck. It's fun. It's fun to do a blog.
Exactly.
It certainly is.
It really is. And like you say, it's a lovely community of people. So it's a nice community to be in, and the people, when you meet them online, when you meet them in person, they're great to be around. So it's fun, like you say.
And podcasting as well. I mean, you're way ahead of us there, because we launched our podcast, the Diet Doctor podcast, just a couple of months ago.
Just recently, didn't you? Yes.
So Dr. Brett Scher is doing it in the US, and yeah, I think he's doing a great job with it. It's going to be really exciting to see where it goes. But it seems to, I think it's going to be great.
Yes, I like podcasts. I like, you know, I like audio. It's just something you can do while you're doing other things.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of people listen to podcasts when they're driving or when they're out walking. It's just nice. It feels quite personal. It's just there in your ears. It's quite intimate.
Yeah, no, I like it too. It's like you said, there are certain times when you can't really do much useful except perhaps listen to audiobooks or podcasts. It's perfect, like when you're traveling or, you know, driving, or yeah, it's perfect for that. I agree.
Yes, exactly. Good multitasking option. I always like anything that you can multitask with.
Yep. Make you feel sort of that you're putting your time to good use.
Exactly. Being more productive.
So what are your favorite keto podcasts? What are the top podcasts? I mean, except for your podcast and ours, what would be the...
Well, I'd always have to say the Two Keto Dudes, of course, because that's where I come from, and that's, you know, they're my friends, they're my mentors. So that really has to be my favorite that I listen to. But, you know, I listen to all sorts of podcasts in a wide range, you know, not just keto podcasts, but you know, some of the female podcasts I like, and I like some of the comedy podcasts like Adam Buxton. I do like interviews. I like hearing people's stories, so I guess they're my favorites overall. I do like interviews, you know, with other people and hearing what they've got to say.
All right.
So maybe you could share some a top tip or two with our listeners. I'm sure you've got lots.
About keto?
Yes, well, anything you like, but yes, whatever, a top tip.
Oh, anything. Oh, I have so many tips, but if I try to stick to the topic, I mean, so I thought about this. There are, I think, two really major ones, and I'm sure most people have already heard it before, but, you know, why not just repeat it? And this idea, we touched on it earlier in the interview, but you know, when you're on a keto diet, one of the main benefits is you reduce your feeling of hunger. So you can really maximize the benefits of a keto diet for weight loss if you need it, or reversing type 2 diabetes, but by only eating when you're hungry. So if you're not hungry, don't eat. That's pretty basic. But I do think, like we talked about, a lot of people still have to sort of learn to do that, because it's so ingrained in us that you're supposed to eat all the time. And like you said, you know, if you're not hungry, can you not eat? Well, you can. You just don't do it. And it's okay. And then the second tip is also very, very basic. And it's, you know, it's to remember that on a keto diet, especially when you're starting out, you need more fluid and salt. I think that's the main thing that people suffer from on a keto diet is deficiency in salt and fluid. And you could get a headache. You could get, you know, just feel tired. Just don't feel your best. And you may think that, you know, keto just isn't working for you or something. But then if you add enough salt and enough fluid, then you can feel your best on keto often. So like a cup of bouillon or something once or twice a day is great for that. So those are my top two tips. And I guess they're quite basic, but I think they are the best. The most important ones.
It's another thing that people worry a little bit about, though, isn't it? Salt. You know, we have that sort of fear of fat, but there's that fear of salt as well. You know, for quite a while, we've been told to reduce our fat, but reduce our salt. And you see that. I mean, I see it all the time in packaging in the supermarket. You know, this product has lower salt and lower fat. It's still a message that's being given to us. So it's these things that we're really having to turn about face that we've been so used to.
Well, the thing is, you know, on a keto diet, you tend to lose more salt, so you pee out salt to a larger extent. So you basically, what you're doing is replacing the increased sort of losses of salt. So plus, you know, a keto diet tends to lower your blood pressure in the first place. So the idea with eating less salt is it supposed to lower your blood pressure by a little bit? Well, a keto diet already does that. So you're probably going to have a lower blood pressure anyway, even if you add some salt than you had before you started it, probably. I know that's certainly true for me. I mean, I certainly make sure I get enough salt to feel good. And yet my blood pressure is, you know, super low. So yeah, it's like, you know, 120 or 110 through 70, or even lower. So that's the benefit of a keto diet.
Yes, and it's something, isn't it, with the salt that can really help in that first week when you're feeling what some people call the keto flu, but it's basically just a carb withdrawal, isn't it? And you know, you can get headaches and sometimes feel a bit dizzy, and it can help with hunger also, isn't it? Just upping your salt. You know, I say to people sometimes, just measure out a teaspoon and a half of salt a day, and if you take that during the day, it's quite likely to really help you get through that first week.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly the first week is a great idea. But for some people, even after that.
Yes, exactly. It really can make a difference. And I've known plenty of people who've really seen a big difference. So yes, it's a great tip. Salt and water. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today. And thank you for Diet Doctor from all the listeners.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It's thanks to the two keto dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's end quote is from the Buddha. Happiness comes when your work and words are of benefit to yourself and others. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.